This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 14th of June, 2023. Markets extending their rally in the U.S. at least after a CPI figure that was deemed benign. Core inflation coming in as expected, plus 0.4. There's lots of breakdowns of the CPI. We have a little bit on that in today's podcast. Don't want to spend too much time on it, but things like the so-called super core and arguments that the used car category is dragging things unnecessarily high in the short term here. Sort of leaving the idea that inflation is going to be an issue in today's FOMC meeting, and that is the key. What is the decision itself and the guidance? But some interesting adjustments in the interest rates, and we'll talk a bit more about that. Peter, we saw this extension yesterday. It was very broad. I noticed also the small caps having a very strong session yesterday. So it looks like if the Fed does pause today, I think your melt-up scenario has kind of already happened here, but interesting to see what happens if they do indeed pause today, I would say.
It did already happen. Look at the price performance in the S&P 500 futures since May until now. I mean, it's absolutely crazy out there. You can really sense the animal spirits. It's from a social phenomenon, it's actually quite a fascinating thing to observe from outside here. And for a second day straight, energy storage, green transformation up there, really strong performance across the board. There is definitely something brewing in the green transformation space. We'll get back to that in some equity notes very shortly from my side. So and bubble stocks again, look at that, 3.5% yesterday, year to date almost 40%. It's really powering on with the semiconductor. So that is the key segment to follow. And just a few things for me on inflation will be very short today. We have a lot of things to cover. You can see this definition of the core inflation that I really like, because I'm zooming in on the U.S. services sector always, because it's the biggest part of the economy in the U.S. in terms of employment, is where you have a lot of bottlenecks in the labor market, getting labor, etc. And that is also where we are really intensely focused on the wage pressures. And you can see here that the U.S. services sector, when you exclude the volatile energy component, is still hovering around 6%. If you take the month-on-month gains, and you analyze that, you're still at 6% inflation in the U.S. services sector. I think that's a pretty hefty inflation rate. Of course, it's coming down and will come down. The question is just, where is that structural level?
Yeah, and then I won't spend more time on it, but over on slide six, you can have a look at, there's one component that is just almost a nonsense component, especially this year, and that is the medical care services part of the CPI, where they have to do this bizarre imputing or assumptions around what CPI or what the inflation is in this sector just based on profit levels of insurance companies. I mean, it makes absolutely zero sense. So, and it's adjusted in October of every year. So the last adjustment or the prior adjustment from late 2021 through 2022 saw this really adding a lot to the inflation level on services. And then the adjustment last year, less profitable insurance companies, I guess prices are going down in the services sector in the U.S. I hardly think that's the case, but it is actually dragging on the CPI. And you can see the chart there, a very small insert on the right below there, that supposedly we have deflation in U.S. medical care services. If you want to put that into your pipe and smoke it a bit. I think inflation is very difficult to measure. There's another measure here of this so-called real-time inflation being at 2.5%. Year on year, and we are seeing the maximum benefit from the year on year comparisons, basing effects of the crazy energy spike we saw last summer, and that'll be through sort of the July level. So, yeah, we all have to watch how the core inflation shapes up. But for the meantime, LT, I think I'll go to you. We don't see the Fed pricing going up at all. In fact, I think it's dropped down to 15% odds of a rate hike today, only slightly more than 50-50 for another July adjustment, but we're seeing some very interesting adjustments to the yield curve. So further out, so into 2024, the market is pretty steadily pulling back where those anticipated rate cuts. We have also yields all turning around yesterday and closing towards the high for the cycle despite a strong 30-year auction. So very interesting moves in the long end here. So and you've got a slide here on slide seven looking at that 30-year auction.
Yes, John. So basically, everything is smooth on the U.S. Treasury debt bonanza that we have seen this week. So far on Monday and Tuesday, the US Treasury has sold around $300 billion worth of debt, and between today and tomorrow, it's going to sell another $166 billion worth in T-bills. But the good news here, John, is that demand is very strong. Yesterday, we had one of the best 30-year auctions we have seen in the U.S. Treasury history. And the Reserve Repo Facility is adjusting lower. And only this week, there has been outflows, if we can talk that, but a decrease in usage of the Reverse Repo Facility by $70 billion. So it's very likely that money market funds are buying into T-bills, and that's good news for the market because it means that banks' reserves remain sticky at the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, those are very interesting internal observations. My only headline observation is that the yields are closing higher, and I'm really curious what happens. And Peter, you and I talked about this, that U.S. 10-year perking back up and closing higher despite the supposed reasonably good news on inflation. And despite this strong 30-year auction, so that could be one thing that potentially upsets a melt-up scenario is if the long end starts to come in higher, the U.S. 10-year, for example, pushing into the 4% range. And then talking fixed income, Althea, we cannot help but talk about the situation over in the U.K. Gilts, the 2-year advancing, I think it was 26 basis points yesterday after that much stronger than expected U.K. labor market data, and particularly the removal and the revisions, sharply improved revisions to the April data. This is starting to look a little bit disorderly. Sterling initially found no support. I thought that was very interesting, but then later finally did start to rally on this rise in yield. So take us through what your thoughts are about the gilts here.
Well, John, after yesterday, it's pretty clear that inflation remains a big problem in the UK. And I believe that the demand for gilts is unlikely to return until the Bank of England has inflation under control. I'm going to take you on slide number 8. I put two charts there. On the right-hand side, you have 2-year gilts, and you can see that the 2-year gilts broke above 4.68%, a level that created some problems last September and forced the Bank of England to intervene. Well, if yields continue to trade above this level, they might rise to next resistance, which is at 5.57%, a level that we didn't see until 2008. But the most troubling graph is the one at the swap spread that you see on the right-hand side. And the reason for that is that despite we have seen that 25 basis points movement upwards up in the 2-year yield, the swap spread didn't tighten much. So it means that the swap rates have increased also, and the market is pricing higher inflation in the foreseeable future.
All right. Very interesting to watch that. And again, a bit surprised the degree to which Sterling is absorbing strength here on this. To me, it suggests that there's a concern about real yields in the UK. And switching, how is this feeding into the Forex market? You can see over on slide 5. So we have the dollar kind of neutral here, waiting this FOMC, waiting, how the Treasury issuance shapes up for the dollar and sentiment not providing any support for the dollar either, and risk sentiment, that is. And we have the Chinese renminbi very weak here, the weakest relative to the rest of the FX space we're observing here, on anticipation of them moving into the direction of easing rates at tonight's meeting after that surprise reverse repo cut. And the yen, very weak here as well with these rising yields elsewhere. And again, the Bank of Japan, as I've emphasized, is potentially a larger risk than the FOMC this week if they finally do move and indicate a tweak in policy. So something like sterling yen with that big stretch wider in the yield spreads, just really stretching aggressively higher. I think this is another source of or another melt-up phenomenon. Could continue if the Bank of Japan skips once again here and yields continue to rise. But at some point, there's going to be an ugly and massive, I think, mean reversion once the Bank of Japan finally starts to indicate that shift in policy. Aussie also strong. We have all in your space, copper trying at that really critical level, sort of closing above it. But we'll see your observations on that. And Aussie, I think, tracking hopes for Chinese stimulus and a little bit of a sense of hope as well in the key commodities markets here that are starting to make their presence felt, or at least the copper is.
Yeah, we are gearing up for some potential disappointment here, because the market has really been moving high, especially some of the China-focused commodities. You mentioned copper. You can see that here in slide 10. We are above, we're trading around that 382 level. We're back above the 200-day moving average. So something that should signal a return of momentum. But at the same time, I think we just simply have to wait and see what comes out of China, because looking at what's happening domestically in the domestic markets in China, the stock market is not really responding. Banking sector is not really responding either. So it is as if the outside world is looking for something that the domestic market is still having a bit of a hard time believe will have a major impact. So let's see. It's also what's lifting the crude oil price yesterday. So some solid support now emerging there below 72 in Brent crude.
Yeah, it looks like almost like a hard level the way it's bouncing every time it gets down there. And then on the gold market, as I was talking to you about earlier, looking pretty heavy. I have to imagine it has something to do, of course, with the risk sentiment, as you've mentioned in the internal call, but these longer yields perking up once again in the U.S. And I noted a couple of, if you pull up a gold versus euro chart, getting to some key support and sterling versus and gold, gold and sterling terms also looking quite heavy. So it's an interesting test here for the sentiment, I suppose, for gold.
Absolutely. And it does indicate, as I put in the headline there on slide 9, that the gold may need more than a hawkish posture at this point to restart the rally, simply because all the excitement we're seeing in the stock market, there's not really any need for a hedge at this point in time. So it looks a bit tired. We had a few lower highs this week, this past couple of weeks, and that leaves the downside risk, I would say, a little bit elevated at this point in time. You mentioned euro gold, that 1,800 euro per ounce level is really key to watch as well. And just looking on an insert there on the right, something that's obviously a bit of a challenge to gold right now. The real rate you get is the highest we've seen in more than a decade, looking at where the inflation expectations are 1 year out and where the Fed funds currently are. And that's also adding as a drag at this point.
All right, Peter, back over to the stock market. We have some stocks to watch. Interesting stories, and among others, an AMD. Everyone's interested in these AI names and what they're doing. So take us through what you're looking at today.
Yeah, if we start from the bottom, we're on slide 11 in today's slide deck. AMD, they launched yesterday their MI300X chip. It's an AI chip for generative AI acceleration. It sounds very advanced.
Is that what they designed it for when they were designing it, or is that... Well, the marketing department came up with.
I like your tone, John. I like your tone. Of course, there's a lot of marketing shenanigans going on right now across the space to put AI in everywhere. But in any case, it's a very interesting chip, to say the least. It's sporting a 192 gigabyte of memory. Just for comparison, NVIDIA's main AI chip, which is called H100, is at 120 gigabytes. So they really in here were a bit to compete with NVIDIA. And this is just heating up. And I was actually having a conversation at a technology keynote conference where we debated this. And I think for this industry, it's very, very important to have AMD in the mix. Because if you only have one company like AMD, it's obviously not good for competition and pricing long term. So I think the industry is cheering for AMD to come up with good solutions and products here to compete with NVIDIA. Two other big news very quickly: Microsoft Activision, California judge yesterday put the deal on pause. We had UK regulators recently saying that this was not a good deal for competition. And this California judge also wants the FTC to take their time, do a thorough investigation. What is the competition outcomes from this deal? So another roadblock there from Microsoft. Bunch, an $8 billion acquisition of Viterra. They are here to form the world's largest agricultural business. It's storage, transportation, trading, import-export, a big thing here. And the deal is expected to be closed by mid-2024. Glencore will be an owner, 15% of the combined company after the acquisition is done. The Argentinian government is already out with a lot of noise, saying they're pushing back on this deal. They're really afraid that it will cripple competition in the agricultural sector.
And we have the earnings to watch today, Lennar. We previewed that one yesterday. I don't know if you want to add anything on the earnings to watch.
Nope. Listen to yesterday's podcast.
Okay, let's do that. Look at the survey, please. To survey the questions for our listener podcast for this week and next. We have some answers dribbling in at a little bit slower pace than the last time around. So please get some energy around that, and we'll have lots to offer. And I think some of these answers, specific topics we'd like to address, we'll use as deep dive podcasts in coming weeks as well. For example, the most popular one so far has been Peter's. How does Peter look at individual companies in terms of financials, et cetera? So we'll hopefully, Peter, do a deep dive on that at some point in the future. All right, macro calendar, no secret. It's FOMC day. Question I have is, as FOMC pause, if they do pause, is that not the story? And the story could be in the longer end of the yield curve that continues higher. So I think be careful around the reactions and be careful as well because we have a Bank of Japan meeting that has more potential to impact global liquidity if they finally do start to move. I think some optionality around yen could be an interesting way to approach that. I'll sharpen some language and thoughts on that in tomorrow's podcast, hopefully. We also have a PBOC announcement tonight in the Asian session, so the Asia's Thursday session, Australian employment data, and a couple other bits and pieces there, as you can see on slide 13. All right, it's FOMC day. If you want to follow live comments that I have, you can find me on Twitter at John J. Hardy. I'll be sending out my thoughts and some thoughts as well on the accompanying projections, etc., dot plot, and whatever the Fed is saying. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back tomorrow to wrap it all up with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.